My name is Michael Grossman. With me today is Jeff Barrett. We're going to talk to you today about building map books using desktop. We'll be showing you most of today's presentation using ArcMap. But toward the end, this is the first year where we are also showing map books in ArcGIS Pro. So you'll get a little intro to Pro, and you'll see a transition. We'll import some map documents, some data-driven pages map documents, into Pro, and you'll see how that works. Jeff and I are both product engineers. I'm based out of Redlands. Jeff is based out of the Olympia, Washington office, and we were both on the original project team that did things with map books. We called it map automation. We built data-driven pages into the software. We also built ArcPy mapping, which is Python for doing mapping tasks, and you'll see both of those today. I just want to mention just a schedule overview tip for today. Obviously, you're in an 8:30 session right now. The expo, what we used to call the showcase, the big floor, that closes at 1:30 today. So if you wanted to get a question answered, don't wait until afternoon. Get it done lunchtime or earlier, because we're right at 1:30, we kick everybody out, and we start tearing down those machines. So that catches a lot of people off guard, especially if this is your first conference. The Thursday expo closes early, so get your question answered down there. And we have a slide at the end of some related sessions, and there are two full ArcPy mapping sessions this afternoon presented by Jeff. They're going to be over in across the sale area on the other side of the map gallery. So you'll have two afternoon sessions to learn more about ArcPy mapping if you wish. All right, so I'll talk about map books a little bit. Data-driven pages is some functionality that's built into ArcMap, and it's a full user interface approach to building map pages. So map pages are the main primary content of your map book. We use the term map pages to distinguish things separate from what might be a title page, a gazetteer, table of contents, etc. Data-driven pages doesn't build those things for you. It only builds the map pages. ArcPy mapping is a scripting framework for map output. So that's Python. You're using Python to open a map document and to open PDFs, and you can stitch PDFs together. And you'll see how we use ArcPy mapping to build a full map book that really does have a title page, that does have a gazetteer at the end. Types of map books. When we talk about map books, it can mean a few different things. The first thing that most people think of is what we call a reference map book. That's a map book that just shows a bunch of different extents. It's like the map book that I give as an example is always the fire trucks for the city. They've always got a three-ring binder with maybe the engineering or public works department built a map book for them that shows every address in town. Even with mobile devices and navigation systems, if anything breaks down electronically, every fire truck's always got a paper map book in the truck. So that's the classic reference map book, just to help you find your way from point A to point B. You can build these with data-driven pages. Data-driven pages also supports a type of reference map book called strip maps. So strip maps are good for showing maps along a linear feature, such as a river or a specific road or route. There are couple more what we would consider advanced map books, and that would be thematic map book or temporal map book. A thematic map book would be something that shows a single site location but changes the layers that are visible. So each page is showing a different theme. All pages have the same extent. You can see that example on the top left. You'll see there's the aerial photograph, there's a parcel map, and it looks like there's some sort of contour map there. Temporal map book would be a map book that shows a time series. So in the lower right here, you actually see a map that's showing this zebra mussels invasive species in the Great Lakes region. Now, both of these types of map books are ArcPy mapping only. So we're going to show you a lot of data-driven pages today. We'll also introduce ArcPy mapping. If you're interested in making a thematic map book or a temporal map book, we'll show you some samples that can help you get started with that. But if you'd like to see some of that in action, I would recommend going to our afternoon workshops about ArcPy mapping. All right, so a little more about data-driven pages. This is the built-in functionality, very easy to use for building a reference map book. Data-driven pages, basically you can think of it like bookmarks. It's going to take a single page layout, and it's just going to zoom that page, kind of pan it around or zoom it around to hit a bunch of different features. It's driven from a layer in your map. We call that the index layer. It can be an existing thing. You could, you know, zoom into water meters, or you could generate a grid. We have tools for generating grid polygons, and you can zoom to those to act as your pages. But the important concept to take away is that data-driven pages are driven from a layer in your map, and they change your map extent page to page. So a single page layout is able to produce lots of pages. At the bottom of the screen here, you'll see a URL to learn more. We'll have a number of these URLs during the session today, and they all start with esriurl.com. So this one is esriurl.com 11533. That's 11533. This opens the help topic for data-driven pages. So you'll see some stuff here today. You'll maybe take some notes. But when you get back to the office, what we really want you to do is open this URL and read that help topic as a best way to get started. It'll answer most of the questions that you'll have, and it'll walk you through a basic workflow. Also, everybody, I'm not sure if you know, the slides that we're presenting today, the slides from all of the workshops, will go live online a couple of weeks after the conference. Just look up user conference proceedings. So the Esri User Conference 2016 proceedings will have links to a PDF version of all of the slides that you've seen here this week. So these are live links inside the slides. So when you get them, you can click on them. I mentioned data-driven pages. There's some sort of partner functionality called dynamic legends, dynamic text, and dynamic pictures. Those work along with data-driven pages to help you build the map pages for your map book. So you'll see all of that in a demonstration. So let's go over to Jeff and see some of this in action.
All right, thank you, Michael. Can you hear me okay in the back? Excellent. So what I want to do is first show you the product that we're going to build. And we're going to build a complete map book, which includes using data-driven pages to build the map sheets, and then using ArcPy mapping to kind of pull everything together into one single output PDF. So realize here that I have three PDFs. One represents the title page, the individual map sheets, and then some street index pages. And if we look at all of those together, we have our final map book. Okay. So the first page, obviously, is the title page, introductory page. And I should also mention, and we'll give you the links later, everything that we're showing you here today is downloadable, and you can kind of go through this entire process. But obviously, there are the individual sheets. And as we go from page to page to page, there are some things that are updating. For example, in the upper right-hand corner, we have a page number. We have these little white tabs or numbers on the tabs, which represent the adjacent page numbers. So as we go from page to page, those are updating. We also have a locator map, which has a masking layer to kind of gray out the neighboring pages and give a little more focus to the area where we are. We have some dynamic legend capabilities, so as we go from page to page, different symbology will appear, or only the symbology that is in the visible extent will appear. That's an option. And then, for the sake of a demonstration, what I did is this B2 and B3 that you see in the lower right-hand corner, that's actually a picture. So as I go from page to page to page, I just want to be able to show you how a picture can change as you go to each different page. If we scroll to the bottom, we'll also see that we have some street index pages. And this is something that can't be built with ArcMap out of the box, but it can be built using Python and a third-party site package called ReportLab, which is really nothing other than a really nice PDF authoring tool where you specify, for example, the horizontal lines, the vertical lines, the placement of the page number, the number of columns, footers, etc. And then you just flow information into the engine, and it just automatically generates pages using the formatting set up until all that information has been flowed. So in this particular case, I have four pages worth. And that output is a separate PDF. All right, so let me close the result, and let's go and build it. So here I have a basic starting page. A lot of stuff has already been set up. I have data frames and graphic elements all placed. But now I want to actually drive the individual extents using data-driven pages. So what I'll do is I'll open up data-driven pages toolbar, and I can do that by going to customize toolbars and then turn on data-driven pages. And what I want to do first is just set it up. Actually, before I set it up, let me just explain something else. I'm going to turn these layers off, and I want to show you this one right here. This happens to be a feature class, which is a bunch of perfectly square extents. And this feature class was generated using one of our geoprocessing tools that allows us to create an index layer. But let me caution you, you do not have to create an index layer that is a series of perfect square rectangles. You can have any feature class and use any feature class in data-driven pages to drive your extents, right? They can be a bunch of county polygons or school locations. You can even use a point feature class to drive your extents, because with points, you just specify the point feature class and a scale, and that gives you an extent, okay? So I happen to be using these square rectangles because these work really nicely in these street index examples, but you don't have to. I also have a secondary index layer that I use to help someone identify labels within a single extent by giving them this sort of bingo A, you know, 1 to A3 to C1 to C3, and you'll see that. But really, the bulk of the information are the streets themselves. So I'm going to turn on the setup for data-driven pages, and in about 5 clicks, I can get all of this working. First thing we need to do is enable data-driven pages. We can turn it on and turn it off if we need to. The next thing we need to do is locate our index layer. So that happens to be in my layers data frame, and it happens to be the B primary index layer. But you would just browse to the appropriate data frame and layer. The next thing it asks is the name field. This is going to be a field that hopefully uniquely identifies each page in the series. Right? You don't want to have 2 pages with the same name or the same identifier, because if you want to go to it, well, which one will it go to? All right. So I have page name, and I'm sorting on a field called page number. Now, the other option, the controls on the right here are optional fields. And let's say as I go from page to page, I may want to change my rotation, right? Perhaps I'm changing the rotation just so that the shape fits better in the extent that I have. I have more space and I get a larger scale. We can also optionally change the spatial reference. If we have a very large geographic extent and we're going through different states, for example, maybe we're going to want to change the UTM zone or as we go from page to page. And then also we have a page number. So in this case, we can either specify an offset. So in this example, remember I have that title page at the beginning, so I'd want everything offset. So I would set my starting page to be number 2. But I happen to have a page number attribute, so I'm just going to use that instead. So I'll select page number. Then I go to the extent tab. Now, when you set the extent and you're using a feature, by default, it zooms to that feature and then allows a little bit of a buffer, like 25% is the default. If you want to zoom to the perfect extent of that feature, that perfect envelope around that feature, in my case, I want to set it to be 100%. Why? Because I've created these grid index polygons that are perfectly square. I authored my data frame to be perfectly square. So now when I zoom to each of those, they're going to fit perfectly in the data frame, and I'm not going to see any of the neighbors. If I wanted to see some of that slight overlap, I would just introduce a bit of a margin. There are other options here, like rounds to the nearest scale, or center and maintain current scale. This is very useful if you're working with point feature classes, right? Just maintain the scale. And also, you may want the scales to be different from page to page, and you can use an attribute that allows you to do that. I'm not going to. So I'm just simply going to click OK, and I've just zoomed to my first page. So now, via the Data-Driven Pages toolbar, I can navigate to the pages by just simply clicking, and I can also type in the name of a page and just zoom directly to it. That's the amount of time it takes to set up Data-Driven Pages. You need a feature class, a couple of setup options, and you're ready to go. But there's a lot more to do, because typically when we go from page to page, we want other things to update as well. So the other thing that's really nice to update is dynamic text. So as we go from page to page, we want text information to change. So let me go to the Insert tab, and I'll come down here to Dynamic Text. And there are a bunch of different text options, and if you were to do a search on dynamic text in the help system, you'll see there are many, many, many more options than just the ones, the common ones that we display in the user interface. But to make it really simple, I'll just insert current time so I can keep track of myself here. And I'm going to throw it off the page because I don't want time to actually be in my layout. So I'm just kind of moving it off the page. And when I export all this stuff, it's actually not even going to show. But if I right-click and I go to the properties of the time, you'll see that there's a string here. Time colon space is a literal string. If I were to remove that, it'd just simply be getting rid of the word time. I can add anything I want to before or after these less than and greater than symbols, and they'll just be added to the literal string. But what's important is what's between those symbols. I have a dynamic text tag. All dynamic text tags start with DYN, and then they have some sort of special meaning inside. So in this case, I'm working with the current time, and then optionally, again, if you were going to help, you could learn that you could format that time in all different ways. Maybe you don't want to see seconds, etc. I'm going to get rid of the literal string time and just click OK. I'll just add that right here. And you notice as I move it around, my seconds are changing. Another one I'm going to add, which is often a common request, is document path. And before I add document path, I'm going to make it a little bit small. Oops, wrong toolbar. I'm going to the drawing toolbar, and I'm just going to make it size 12 before I add it. So now I'll go in, and I'll insert document path. That's still a little too big. Oh, I see what I did. I accidentally changed the size of the previously selected element. So let me just change this back down to 12 and select OK. So what's useful about this one is you can be moving your projects all over your system drives, and every single time you open up those layouts, it's going to be showing you the current location of where that path came from. So that's what we mean by dynamic text. It changes based upon the information that's contained within that dynamic tag. But relevant to this presentation, I want to go in and I want to insert. Let me just set this to 16 first. And I'm going to insert some elements that are relative or are related to data-driven pages. If you have data-driven pages turned on, these extra options appear. And I want to just simply insert data-driven page number. It gets added. I'm going to put it in my upper right-hand corner. Again, if I go into the properties of it, you'll see that it has a dynamic tag. It's using a page property, and it's looking for the number value. And that's the number that we specified in that setup dialog. All right. Now, what about these values here? These have come from an attribute table. If I right-click on my index attribute table and I open it up, you'll see that I have a series of fields, one of them called picture path. We have picture, page name, page number, pitcher path, and then we have all of these extra fields. We have 8 of them. And basically, we used a geoprocessing tool that automatically adds these 8 cardinal directions, and then it looks at each individual feature in the index layer, and it grabs those 8 neighbors and whatever those page numbers are, and it places them inside of the fields, right? So let me show you how to find that tool. I'm going to go into search. I'm going to search for tools. And I'm simply going to type map book. So when I search on map book, it brings us to 6 different tools that are available. The one that I'm interested in is called Calculate Adjacent Fields. I'll right-click on it, and I'll show you where it is in Catalog. There are multiple data-driven page-related geoprocessing tools available in the System Toolbox under Cartography Tools, Data-Driven Pages. Here we have Calculate Adjacent Fields. We have Calculate Central Meridian, Grid Convergence, Calculate UTM Zone. And we also have these 2 other ones, which again are optional. You may or may not need to use them. But I use the Grid Index Features tool to actually go in and create those tiles that I'm using to control each individual extent. It's a very easy tool to use. You specify perhaps the layers that you want to use to drive the extent. So you want to build these index layers around what extent? Well, around the extent of all these features. So I bring in the feature classes of interest. I can bring in multiple layers if I want. I can set all of this up in page unit space or in real world coordinate space. I can specify the total number of the polygon widths, the polygon heights, and the units. I can also specify the number of columns. So there's all sorts of ways of tweaking the knobs to generate these index layers. Okay? And there's really nice extensive help that covers that. What I want to do is calculate adjacent fields. Now I've already done it, but all I had to do was select the index layer and then select the field that I wanted to use to calculate all the other adjacent field values. So I selected page number, and I clicked OK. I'm going to click cancel here, but that again created all of these values. Now, because those values are there, they're appearing on my page. If I were to look at any one of these and go into the properties, again, I have a dynamic text tag, and I'm going after an attribute in the index layer called page number underscore north. And I just simply did this 4 times. How did I do it? Okay, I went to insert, dynamic text, and I selected data-driven page attribute. And then all I do is I go to, and I'll select north, for example. I'll add that, and there it is. There's page 3. And of course, I took the time to make it white because I have it on a gray tab. And of course, I spent a lot of time setting up those cute little tabs to make it look, you know, somewhat interesting. But that's all you need to do. Dynamic text is very simple. Now, the other thing I want to do is spend a little time working on this locator map. So I'm going to zoom into the layout. And I'll turn on, in my locator, I'll turn on my primary index. I'm going to go to my locator map, go to its properties, and I'm going to go to the data frame. And rather than it just defaulting to automatic, I want to change the extent to track the extent of another data frame. Okay, so I have one other data frame, so I want the locator extent to track the extent of my primary layers data frame. So I can specify the other data frame, and in this case, I want to set my margin to be 300%, because remember, I had the width of 3 index features, so that's 300%. I'll select OK, and there we go. So as the main extent moves, this 3x3 index grid will move with it. Okay? And the main extent will always be in the center. The other thing I want to do is kind of create a masking layer. So I'll come over here and I'll just change the color to be a gray. And that doesn't look very good. So maybe the next thing I'll do is I'll go into the properties of the layer and I'll set transparency to be 50%. But I don't want everything to be. I don't want everything to have this transparent gray over it. I want this center one to not have that. So to do that, what we do is we go back into the properties of the index layer. And if data-driven pages is enabled, this extra button appears. Okay? It's called page definition. It only appears when data-driven pages is enabled. And what that allows me to do is essentially create a relationship between layers in the TOC and the index layer. Now, in this case, I happen to be setting properties on the index layer, but if you have other layers that have the same attribute values as the index layer, you can control visibility if they match or don't match. So, for example, I'm going to enable this, and I'm going to base everything off of page name, and I'm going to select OK. And OK. So right now, this feature in this index layer matches the page name of this current extent. Right? Well, that's the complete opposite of what I wanted. So I'll go back to the definition query, or page definition query, and select Don't Match, and select OK. So now I have the complete opposite. The other thing I want to do is just to kind of give a little more attention to the locator, is I'm going to click Extent Locator, Extent Indicators. I'm going to grab my only other data frame, add that to the list. I can go into the frame properties and customize the symbology of that extent. And another really important point is, let's say that I was using county boundaries as my index layer. Well, if this is unchecked, then the extent indicator would actually be the boundary of that odd-shaped county. If this is checked, then it would be a perfectly square envelope that encompasses that geometry. Okay, so either you want a rectangle extent or you actually want the extent of the feature to be highlighted. In my example, they're both the same, because I'm using basically squares. So I'm going to select OK. Looks good. I'm going to turn on some labels. And the last thing I'm going to do is, I'm not completely pleased that the service layer credits are kind of masking my base map below. We're all legally obligated to display these credits, but we don't have to actually have them over the data frame itself. So I want to move them off of this data frame to somewhere else on the layout. So again, I'll go to Insert, Dynamic Text, and I'll select Service Layer Credits. Whoa, way too big. I'll go to the Properties. I'll change the symbol to 6. Select OK. And I'll just resize this. I'm going to save a little bit of room for a picture here. So now you can see I really cleaned that up. It's not colliding with my other labels, but I still have it on my layout. Now another thing is, while we're here, and another dynamic thing that we can set up, is we can go into the properties of a legend, and there are some really nice hidden gems via the Items tab. The Items tab gives us one option that allows us to only show the classes that are visible in the current map extent. I don't want to see all the symbols. I want to see just those that are relevant to the map. Select Apply, and there we go. Click OK, and I'll just navigate a couple pages, and you'll see that it's changing. Another option, which is frequently asked, is to show feature count. So I can actually show the numbers of features that are located in the visible extent. Again, as we go from page to page, all these numbers and symbols will be changing. for this demonstration, I'm just going to turn them off. Now, the last thing I want to do is I want to insert a picture, and I want to make it dynamic. And so I created all of these EMFs that are basically the page name of each page. And I'm just going to add one of them. And this is just a static image. But if data-driven pages is enabled, we can go into the properties of it, go to the picture tab, and by default, it's looking at just a static path. I want to drive that path and drive that picture based on an attribute called picture path, which I had in the attribute table, which contained the paths to all those individual pictures. So I select OK, and it automatically updates. So I go to the next page, and that picture's dynamically changing. You can have multiple dynamic pictures, lots of dynamic text. We'll take questions near the end. Thank you, though. So that's it. Now, the last thing I want to show is how do I get all this out to file? So I'll just zoom to the extent of my page. I'll go to File, Export Map. And let's make sure that I'm in the right folder this time. And I'm going to create a file called Output. And there are a lot of the standard parameters that you can set up when you're doing export. But when data-driven pages is enabled, you have this Pages tab, and it gives you all sorts of options. So I can export all 20 pages, which is what I'm going to do. You can export the current page, selected pages, which is really nice. If you're doing some sort of analysis, you select whatever the index features are, and that's what you write out to a map series. You can actually type in literal strings, 1 through 1-3, 5-8, right? So you can set up that sequence. And then finally, a really important property here is to either create a single multi-page PDF, or you can create individual PDFs for each page. So do I want one PDF in this example, or do I want 20 PDFs with unique names, either using the page name or the page index value? I'm going to go for all of them. It's going to be called Demo. I'm going to click Save, and there it goes. It's creating, it's up to 10 right now. We're halfway there, 20 pages. So now if I go back to my file system, there's output, and we have one part of a map book. All right, I'll turn it over to Michael.
All right, thanks, Jeff. All right, that was a whirlwind tour of just about everything data-driven pages. So you saw Jeff inside of ArcMap driving the user interface using data-driven pages, dynamic text. He was using page definition queries, a dynamic legend, inserted picture in dynamic mode. So all of that Jeff was doing through the user interface. But we're also going to give you a very short and easy introduction to ArcPy mapping. That's using Python for opening map documents and doing some map book kind of operations. So don't panic. I said Python. Nobody ran out of the room. It is scripting. But the things we're going to show you today are really quite simple. And just going into this, we'll tell you ArcPy mapping is, like I mentioned, opening map documents and working with them via Python. Now that phrase ArcPy, you'll find in connection with anything Python in ArcGIS. So if you're doing geoprocessing, if you're just doing some operations like clip or buffer, you'll use ArcPy tools to do that. ArcPy mapping are the pieces of ArcPy that deal with map documents. So you can use it to automate map export and printing. You don't need to be making a map book to automate your printing. If you just want to print 30 pages, or if you just want to export 30 different layouts in 30 separate MXDs to PDF, you can do that in batch mode with ArcPy mapping. It does tie in with data-driven pages, kind of picks up where data-driven pages left off and allows you to access those pages. Jeff was working with things like page name and page number. You can get at those through Python and actually make some really fancy map books using data-driven pages together with ArcPy mapping. All right, so let's see another quick demo, and then I'll talk more about it. And I've got more of those shortened URLs to the help system that'll connect you with the documentation for what Jeff's about to show.
So here are the three parts, and we're simply going to take these three PDFs, combine them together into a single multi-page PDF. I've already showed you the product of it earlier. I'm going to just create this same file again and show you how I did it. So the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to open up the Python window. And I'll move it up to the top here so all of you can see it. And I'm not going to try and teach you Python or anything right now, but I'm going to show you the simple number of steps it takes to take a few PDFs and put them together. First thing I'll do is I'll come back here and I'm going to right-click on this file while holding down the Shift key. I'm going to choose Copy as Path. If you don't hold down the Shift key, you don't have that context menu and it makes life a little more difficult getting that full path plus the file name. So now I'm in the Python window that's available inside of ArcMap, and I'm going to create a variable that's going to hold on to this PDF that lives in the memory of the computer until I commit it to disk. And I'm going to go to the ArcPy site package, and I'm going to go to the mapping module, and I'm going to create a PDF document. I'm going to open up a parenthesis because it needs me to provide it some information. And all it simply needs is the name of the path. So I'm going to hit Control-V, I'm going to hit the R key, Control-V, and I'm going to title it My Map Book. And I'll close the parentheses. So when I hit Enter, I've just created a PDF called My Map Book, but it only exists in the memory of the computer right now. Okay, I haven't committed it, so we don't see that file yet. But now, all I'm going to do is take this variable called myPDF, and I'm going to append pages. What's really nice is, let's say that you have a multi-page PDF already, and you've updated just a single page among all those pages. Well, you can use commands like delete pages, and then insert new pages. So you have all these really nice PDF management tools to combine all this stuff into one final product. But all I'm going to do today is I'm going to append those three pages. So I'll click Append Pages. I'll type R. I'll type Control-V. And this is actually the name of the first PDF. I'll click up arrow again. And the second file name was 2_map_pages. And I'll hit Enter. Pull it up again. I'll enter 3, and this was called index pages. I'll hit enter. And finally, the last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say mypdf.save and close. This is what actually commits it to file. And I come back over here. And there's my map book that I just generated. I can open it up. And again, we can see all the individual parts. Now remember, we're not talking about the street index pages and how those were generated, but there's a very nice sample that you can download that gives you a very complete README, all of the Python scripts needed to generate the street index pages. Back to you, Michael.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
Pretty easy, though, right?
Yeah, so how many? 5 lines of code. And what you saw, I mentioned ArcPy mapping works with map documents. It also works with PDF documents. And that's actually what you saw Jeff doing. Those 5 lines of code just took the three PDF documents that Jeff had sitting in the folder. He had generated his map pages. He had pre-generated his title page. That was just a separate ArcMap layout that he had. created with that overview map, and then the gazetteer, that index at the end. He pre-created those, staged them in a folder, and stitched them together using Python and ArcPy mapping. All right. At the bottom of this page, you'll see two more shortened URLs. Just because we're hot off the heels of Jeff's demo, that index page, he promised you we would give you the link to that index page sample where he built the gazetteer at the end. It uses Report Lab, which you'll also have to download, but all the instructions are here at this link. That is the Mapbook index sample. And it's EzraURL.com 11535. So EzraURL.com 11535. It's a sample written by Jeff. We distribute those through ArcGIS Online. So you'll be taken to an ArcGIS.com page that has the link to a zip file that you can download that has the instructions and all of the sample code inside for you to make your own Mapbook index. Also, Jeff made a complete Mapbook there, and I mentioned in the intro section, data-driven pages produces those body pages with the detailed maps, but stitching things together, producing that title page, and you know, adding other things on to the end, and also doing some of those things like a thematic Mapbook or maybe a Mapbook with facing pages, we have samples for those in the documentation. There is a Mapbook section of the help. It's separate from data-driven pages documentation. It's called Mapbooks. That URL is EzraURL.com 11529. So I can just show you, as you're working with Mapbooks here, not only do we talk about the concepts of it and working with something like building a Mapbook of strip maps, we show you the sample code. So as you come to the bottom of this documentation here, you'll notice that there is sample code that is copy-pastable. You can copy this, paste it in. That's the code for making a complete map book using data-driven pages and ArcPy mapping together. So that's all at that link, EzraURL.com 11529. Just a little bit more about ArcPy mapping, and if you're interested in that, you know, Jeff did this, I think it's a marketing tactic for his afternoon workshops. He wants to get you interested in it. It does a lot more than Mapbooks. It opens an MXD, and you can do a lot of operations. One of the most popular uses for it is actually finding and replacing data sources. If you have all your layers pointed to a file geodatabase or some file-based rasters on a file server, and your file server name changed because your IT department brought out some new hardware, you would normally have to manually repair all of your map documents to point to the new location. With ArcPy mapping, you can make a script to do that. And again, it's sort of copy-pastable. We provide the sample code that you can modify for your own use to do that. So finding and replacing data sources is an excellent scenario or use case for ArcPy mapping. You can update layer symbology. Or you could write a script that generates a report. Say, find every MXD in my system, find all the MXDs that are using a certain file geodatabase or that are connected to a certain server. You can use ArcPy mapping to do that. So it's kind of the sky's the limit. It's only limited by your imagination. And it's really pretty easy to use, and there are tons of samples to get you started. All right. So our next section is ArcGIS Pro. As I mentioned, ArcGIS Pro is a new application. You've probably heard about it this week. You maybe even heard about it last year. We released it in January of 2015, so it's been out for some time. I just was curious, a show of hands, how many people have used it at least once? Okay. I'm assuming most of the room has maybe seen it this week, even on the plenary on Monday. You saw Pro used in the demonstrations. How many people have actually used Pro on a project? Maybe used it for a small project at work, actually in production. Okay. This is the first year we're starting to see some hands go up for that one. Pro does most of what ArcMap does. You know, we're still catching up a little bit. We're on our third release is out. Fourth release, ArcGIS Pro 1.3 is scheduled for next week, but I'll give us some breathing room, maybe the next 2 weeks. We stayed at work until Friday night doing what we think is the final cut of Pro 1.3. So ArcGIS Pro, it is a new application It is included with desktop. So if you have a license for ArcGIS Desktop, for ArcMap, you also have a license for Pro. So you should have access to it. It's just a matter of getting, it's a separate install. And it can install next to any version of ArcMap. Doesn't matter, and you don't need to have ArcMap installed. One of the big items in Pro is 3D. And so it's kind of the 3D functionality that was there in ArcGlobe or ArcScene only through a 3D license is actually included in Pro for free. So it's a combined 2D, 3D experience. It integrates really well with ArcGIS Online. Somebody asked me yesterday down at the expo, do I need to use ArcGIS Online to use Pro? You don't, actually. They really work great together. There's advantages to using them together, but you don't need online. You don't need to push your data online to use it with Pro. It's just like ArcMap. But the interesting thing for us today is that ArcGIS Pro supports multiple map layouts. So if you were an old ArcView, a user of the old ArcView 3, and you had your APR and you had your multiple layouts and your views, that concept is back with ArcGIS Pro. In fact, the file format for ArcGIS Pro projects is APRX as an homage to ArcView. So multiple layouts are supported, and it imports MXDs, and you'll see that in Jeff's demonstration. So you can bring your work from ArcMap into ArcGIS Pro. You're not starting from scratch. Here's a screenshot of the Pro user interface. It does use the ribbon, which sets some people off, but I guarantee you, after 2 or 3 days of using Pro with a ribbon, you'll get very quick. I can work faster in Pro than I can in ArcMap now. The ribbon has modes. What you're looking right now is the layout. What you're looking at right now is the layout mode. Layouts in Pro support something called map series. That's just the Pro term for data-driven pages. We just called it map series. A lot of people were already calling data-driven pages map series, or they were calling it data-driven pages map series as one phrase. So we just simplified things. Call it map series. Map series are a property of a Pro layout. And you can have multiple layouts, so each layout can have a map series or cannot have a map series. It doesn't matter, but you can have one map series for each layout. And then unique to Pro is actually a table of contents for your map series pages. So after you've defined a map series, just like you can work with the table of contents for your layer, we have a mode that's pages mode. And you can see all of your pages listed in sort of a table of contents tree view format. All right, so let's see this in action. Jeff.
All right, thanks, Michael. So back to my original folder structure here. Notice I have a title page MXD. This was a separate MXD I created specifically just to create that title page that I exported to PDF and appended to the map book. I also have my demo MXD, which I use to kind of build the map book in front of you using data-driven pages, and I also have the final version of that. So what I want to do is I want to bring this into ArcGIS Pro. I'll just simply fire up ArcGIS Pro. It remembers some of the previous projects I was on. I'll just create a brand new blank project and go with the default name. Probably isn't good practice, but for demonstration purposes and speed, I'll just do that. But now I have a completely empty project. There's really nothing to look at, right? I have a bunch of tabs, and many of those controls are going to be disabled because I have nothing here. But the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to import a map. And when I import a map, I can either import an MXD, an ArcGlobe document, or an ArcScene document. Right? So we can incorporate all of these things into one project. And what's really nice now is we can do 3D in our layouts, which is going to be a really nice feature. But I'm simply going to import my title page. I'll bring that into a project, and there's the title page. The dynamic text automatically updated. It works just the same in Pro. And I'm going to go back to my Insert tab, and I'm going to import my map pages final. And I'll bring that in. So that obviously comes in with a lot more information. But because data-driven pages was enabled in that map document, it automatically enabled map series in ArcGIS Pro. And because map series are enabled, I have this list map series pages button that allows me to just simply double click on the individual pages, or I have the navigation controls at the bottom, or I can type in a specific page number and it'll just bring me right to it. Okay. Very, very, very easy navigation. You could do a lot of these things in ArcMap as well, just you didn't have the table of contents option. If I go to the layout tab and I go to the map series pull down, you'll see that there's a list of different options. Yeah, right now it's just none and map series. But what we plan on doing in the future is adding additional options below that. So in the future, you may be able to create a bookmark map series based on the extensive bookmarks, or a thematic map series, or a temporal map series, or a range map series. So we're going to be giving you all these different options, and when you select that option, it will give you a different set of properties to establish. So if you look at the map series properties, yes, it is enabled, but very, very similar to what we just showed you in ArcMap, it's all the same properties, right? You're going to specify an index layer, the map frame, the layer, the name field, the sort field, other optional fields, etc. It's really that easy. And that's all that I wanted to show you.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. So that's the sneak peek at ArcGIS Pro. And if you have questions about map series and ArcGIS Pro or anything you saw today, you can come and see us at the showcase. Again, before 1:30, Jeff, you're going down after the workshop today, right?
Yes.
Okay. So Jeff will be there after the workshop, more or less until 1 o'clock. I'll be there from about noon to 1:30. And there are others working the layout area. Our area to visit us is the mapping and visualization functional area. Those are the green towers. So mapping and visualization is where Jeff and I can be found. All right. Just before we start taking questions, I want to go over some additional resources. I throughout the presentation, I gave you some of these URLs. The first one I showed you was the data-driven pages one, esraurl.com 11533. That's the basic data-driven pages documentation for ArcMap. And then I showed you that one with the samples, with the longer Python script that shows you the Python that's for building a complete map book. That's esraurl.com 11529. And there are a bunch of different, that's the intro topic, but there are a bunch of different map book types that it shows you how to build. And then ArcPyne mapping. This one, we haven't showed you this URL before. esraurl.com 11534. And that is the intro section for ArcPyne mapping. Talks about finding and replacing data sources. Talks about using ArcPyne mapping to open map documents, doing that inventory script. All those things we talked about that ArcPyne mapping does. This is the actual API documentation for ArcPyne mapping, so map document scripting. We mentioned that the map index script, and I gave you the URL for that. That is actually part of a larger set of samples that use ArcPyne mapping. And those can be found at esraurl.com 8899. So esraurl 8899 is the set of ArcPyne mapping sample scripts. And I'll show you that page right now. Generate Mapbook with Index Pages is the first one we showed you. We already mentioned this. This is the one that uses Report Lab for building that gazetteer at the end. But you've got almost 10 different samples here, and some of these have multiple scripts inside them, in particular ArcPyne mapping script tools. I think you'll see this if you go to the intro session. But these are starter scripts for all kinds of things, like that simple document inventory, or there's a generic script for just merging PDFs together. And then we even have one that shows sort of how to get a dynamic table up and running using ArcPyne mapping. So all of those samples are at esraurl.com 8899. And then ArcGIS Pro, what you just saw Jeff working with was ArcGIS Pro. So a different application. It's also a different help system. That help is available on the web, just like ArcMap's help. It's pro.arcgis.com is the basic the base page, homepage for pro. But that's esriurl.com/11486 for the pro map series help. So if you've got pro and you want to experiment with map series, want to take a peek at those help topics, this is the link for that.
Hey, Michael, I just want to add one comment and go off script a little bit here. But you saw how easy it was to import data-driven pages into ArcGIS Pro. And Michael, being the export export and printing guru here, there were a lot of limitations with exporting out of ArcMap with transparency and all sorts of export issues that we were never able to address. We addressed a lot of those in Pro. So, you know, migrating to Pro is going to be a very organic thing that happens. You're just going to find yourself doing it. And one thing to try is, if you're having printing and exporting issues, try importing that project or that MXD into Pro and try printing from Pro. I think you'll see a lot of improvements.
Yeah, one of the biggest MapBook questions we get is, my file size is too large, or my legend got chopped off with my picture marker symbols. Two really bad known limit issues with ArcMap that are fixed in Pro, because Pro uses a new graphics and cartography engine. So you don't have to dive headfirst into Pro and commit to it and never go back. You can actually just start using Pro as your export engine. So do all your work in ArcMap, import it into Pro like you saw Jeff do, and click export. You don't even need to save the document, actually. export it, and you get a PDF that fixes some of those issues we faced in the past. So just real quickly, we mentioned Jeff's sessions coming up this afternoon. There's the Introduction to ArcPy Mapping. That's today at 1:30 in room 32. It's room 32 A and B. That's just on the far side of the map gallery. So you walk through the map gallery, and these are the rooms facing the bay. All right, so they're facing west. And I think it's sort of the second room in or third room in is room 32 A and B. That room is also the location for the advanced ArcPy mapping session, so advanced map automation with Python, at 3:15. So that actually includes some other MapBook scenarios, I think, as demonstration. Talks about actually using ArcPy mapping to do some publishing to the server as well. That's another capability of ArcPy mapping. So today at 1:30 and 3:15, over in 32 A and B, is the ArcPy mapping festival of fun. All right, we're going to take questions, but before we do that, just remember, please do the survey. These surveys do get sent to our management, so they see it. So keep that in mind when you're clicking 555 for all of those categories.
It's out of 10 this year, Michael.
No, it's not. Hi. All right. So I'm not number one. I'm number five. Hi. All right. So I'll actually leave up those resources slides while we're taking questions, just in case you guys want to gander at that. And we'll start. So we've got until 9:45. So we should have plenty of time. Right over there. Sure, the question was, how does he avoid labeling at the edge of the map frame? Is that so your text doesn't get chopped?
Right.
Yeah, if your text is getting chopped off, it means you're working with annotation instead of labeling. Labels will never cross the neat line boundary. Annotation, either map annotation or geodatabase annotation, they have a fixed position. They don't change dynamically when your map extent changes. Labeling should actually detect that as a conflict. So make sure you're using labeling and not annotation.
But there's no tolerance against that edge. Like some of the demo PDF, the streets are actually almost to the line, but is there a way to set that buffer?
The street names, so the comment was this.
Geodatabase annotation.
Oh, the street names were almost close to the line. Jeff's example actually was geodatabase annotation.
Okay.
He wasn't labeling. In the demonstration. So I think if you're using labeling, you will probably use an envelope around it. I'm not sure if there's a labeling property that would do that, but you would never have, and labeling actually uses symbolized extent, so you would never have like a black text touching a black neat line. There would always be a gap. if you're using dynamic labeling. Now, our example wasn't using that.
We used GDatabase in the example because what we do is we actually label the features first, we convert those features to annotation, and then we convert the annotation into points. And it's the point labels we use to intersect with the grids so that we know which page, which label is on, not which street is on. Because if I were to just kind of tell you that Main Street is on C1, but the label isn't in panel C1, you'll never find Main Street. So a nice trick to this tutorial is to actually work with GDatabase annotation, convert those to points, do the point and polygon overlay, and that's the information that you use in your street index pages. So we could easily convert it into labeling just the same, that so you wouldn't see that. I just didn't think of that. I was just thinking of the end result, not the actual pretty picture. Sorry.
All right. Over there. Sure. What is the best way to create an index? To create the index layer? Well, you may have your index layer already. One example would be if I want to make a map of school locations and I have the campus boundary polygon, I would just use that as my index layer. And data-driven pages will find every polygon and zoom to it, and that will become a map page, essentially. Yes. So in Jeff's example, he had the grid polygon, right? So he had, you know, the black squares. That was created from a geoprocessing tool. Jeff actually showed the tool, but not he didn't execute it. That tool is called Grid Index Features. And he found that tool. He searched in the search window. He searched for Mapbook, actually, and it showed all of the Mapbook-related geoprocessing tools. The first one you use if you want that grid for map pages, the first tool you run is Grid Index Features. So that's how he created the index layer for this example. There in the back.
Hi, yes, our field users have requested, you know, they're pulling up the PDFs now on some sort of electronic pad or something, versus they're looking at a printed document. And they want to be able to see at the edge of a page or a map that the page to the east is 23, and they want to be able to just touch it and have the link in the PDF. Page 23. Have you thought about adding that capability so that the reference page numbers that appear have a PDF link?
Yeah, we have had that request before. I'm not sure if everybody heard that, but the question was, once you have your Mapbook in a PDF, those neighbor labels, you know, that tell you what page is to the east, what page is to the north, can we make those hyperlinks? Because PDFs have the capability to have hyperlinks inside. It's just inside of ArcMap, we don't have the capability to produce those. We have heard that request. There are some technical challenges in getting it going, but Jeff has something he wants to show.
So this is something that I did. Once I created the PDF map book, I used Adobe Illustrator?
Adobe Acrobat? The full version of Adobe Acrobat, which edits Acrobat Pro.
So I can click on my index pages, I can click on the edges, I can click all over the place.
Did you do that manually, Jeff?
I did it manually.
Okay, so you just drew in the boxes for those hyperlinks. But
it can be done. We just, it's not exposed to us.
Well, in other words, if you had some additional attributes that you were able to attach to the page references, and you can have a post-processing program that went through, found, and put the links in.
Yeah, I mean, there are some ways we might be able to do it, but right now, just carrying that information in ArcMap and the data model we have for the layout doesn't make that easy. That's kind of why we have that limitation. But there's definitely a request for it. It's just a matter of us finding a way to do it. We tried it once, and we actually had some performance issues with our export. And after we tried it, so yeah, we understand the request exactly. There's just some technical limitations that are preventing us from doing that. Do you want to take one? All right. Sure. Right here in the front.
Hi.
Yeah. Are there any ready-to-use layouts for building map books? Well, I'm not sure if any of the sample layouts are good for adaptation, Jeff, in the samples that you have.
Every layout's going to be different, and it's going to require some degree of customization. Do you want a single locator map? Do you want inset maps? You know, how many map frames are you going to have in the layout? I think, you know, the easiest thing with data-driven pages is all you need is a single map frame in an index layer, and you're ready to go. So everything else is just extra bonus. So you could download this sample. If this sample looks nice, you could take any MXD that you find attractive, and you can start with that as your template. But we don't have a set of templates for data-driven pages. These samples?
Yeah, the one that, Jeff, I don't know, is Atlanta Streets included in the index sample? Or
yes, that's street index pages.
Yeah, so street index pages, I'm not sure if it's on this list, but all of those samples are at esruurl.com/8899. The zip files have some of the samples inside. Yes, yes. Yeah, it's right here on the screen right now. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's on the screen right now. That's the ArcPy mapping map automation group at esruurl.com/8899. Yeah, that does have quite a few sample MXDs inside.
You know, and this one is nice. I actually copied this, I think, from Clark County, Washington, where they had the nice little gray tabs around the perimeter, and I just tried copying that. So yeah, it took a lot of extra work to create all those little graphics, but if that saves you some time, that's great.
Sure.
But just realize that if your page size is ever so slightly different, or if your data frame needs to be a different size, then you're going to have to go in and modify all those individual graphics.
Yeah, you're probably going to have to do the steps. You're going to have to learn the steps, or at least follow along with the documentation. Yeah. All right. Yeah, right here.
What is that? What?
File type for those images?
The question was when Jeff did the dynamic, when Jeff showed inserting a dynamic image, what was the file type?
Would that work with like my 400 bit maps or JPEGs? I have to use that .e. I didn't even write it down.
It was .emf. The format Jeff used was .emf. That's a vector format. I think that's why Jeff chose that. But you can use JPEG, EMF, BMP, and do we support PNG?
We
added PNG support maybe around ArcMap 10.1 or 10.2. So the major image formats, the raster formats, are supported as well for inserted pictures. Yeah, do you want to show the table, Jeff?
I can show it right now.
Yeah.
You want to switch me over
here? You're on right now.
Oh, am I? Mm-hmm. Okay. So here's the picture path.
Yeah.
So it's literally going to that location. And in ArcMap, you can also have relative paths. So this doesn't have to be the full path name. It can be relative to where the MXD is. So I could have gotten rid of all of this and even up to the word bookmarks and just had pictures/a1.amf, because pictures is in one folder above relative to my MXD. So that works as well.
All right. Yep, right there.
Is it possible to add a list or a table on each sheet that shows the features of a given class or within the extent of that sheet's data frame?
Yeah, we knew this question was coming.
It comes up every time?
Yeah, it comes up every time. I'm glad it was there before, not in the private question session later, just so I can show everybody. The question was, is there a way to make a dynamic table? You'd like to insert the table, but have the contents of that table change page to page. Right, so it's always relevant. You can do that a number of different ways. Built in with ArcMap, just using the UI, there is no way to do a dynamic table with basic ArcMap. The production mapping extension for ArcGIS is an extra add-on extension you have to pay for, but it has an awesome, fancy inserted table. It's called the grid table element. And it does every sort of dynamic table thing you would want to do. But if you don't want to go full-blown production mapping, or if you don't have that extension, you can use ArcPy mapping to do it. Jeff has examples of that. Remember I showed this page with all of the sample scripts? And Jeff, is it, which one is it? All right, that's this one with Texas on it. So DDP, dynamic tables and graphs. That shows an example of using ArcPy mapping to move graphics around. There is also the attribute dynamic text, the same dynamic text we use to show neighbor labels. It's just reading an attribute from the index layer, and it's displaying it on the page. So if your index layer can carry the content you want to show, you could actually produce several of those. You could produce several dynamic text on the page, so I kind of group them together and get like a very simple dynamic table running. Also, joined data is available for the display. So if you join, if you have a good key in between your index layer and maybe something that's just a standalone table or something where you'd want to show it, with something with all the data you'd like to display, you can do a join and then use dynamic text to display that content. But there's some limitations with that. The ArcPy mapping one is a lot more flexible. Right. So, yeah.
It's briefly mentioned during the advanced ArcPy mapping session, and I talked briefly about how it works. There's nothing advanced about ArcPy mapping, so that session really focuses on some creative ideas and things that you can do to get around some of the things you can't do with the core software.
Right here. Sure. The question is, in ArcMap or Pro, using dynamic text, is that right? Using dynamic text, can you get it to display attribute of a layer that's not index feature? Right now, it's sort of what I just hinted at. You can, if there's a key you can join on, you know, if you can somehow join it, you could actually do some geoprocessing ahead of time to get that join in there. Let's say this is in the school district or it's not in the school district, and I'm showing school districts. Each school district is a page. I could do a join on that and then, you know, maybe show it. But that's sort of a one-to-one relationship and doesn't allow you to do maybe what you want. So this script actually allows you to show multiple kind of one-to-many.
ArcPy mapping allows you to do that because you're just using scripting logic. You're connecting to another feature class. You're grabbing its attribute, and you're using its string as the string or the text value of the element on the layout. But it does require scripting, right?
Yeah, so not built in, no.
I mean, ArcPy mapping is really easy. It's a scripting environment. It's not a full-blown development software package, but it allows you to automate things very nicely. You don't use ArcPy mapping to customize the application, but you use ArcPy mapping to get to things in a map document or a layer file and manipulate them. And manipulating text values is a common example.
All right. And did we get the question that somebody asked? I know mid presentation somebody had a question. Did we get to you?
You guys answered.
Awesome. All right. Okay, and we probably have time for one more, and then we'll take questions up at the desk. Was there anybody else who had one? All right, well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
All right.